Imagine for a moment that you are on a hill in Galilee more than 2,000 years ago. The sun is shining on the green grass, a gentle breeze caresses your face, and in front of you is a man who is about to change the world with his words. This man is not a powerful politician nor a famous philosopher. He is Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of God, who is about to deliver the most revolutionary speech in history, the Sermon on the Mount. But what is so special about this sermon? Why, after 2 millennia, do we still talk about it? Brothers and sisters, get ready for a journey that will change your perspective forever. In the next few minutes, we are going to dive into the most impactful teachings the world has ever known, teachings that challenged empires, transformed hearts, and continue to be as relevant today as the day they were spoken. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. With these words, Jesus began to turn the world upside down. What does it really mean to be poor in spirit? The answer will surprise you and make you question everything you thought you knew about success and happiness. Now you might be thinking, all right, it sounds interesting, but why should I care about a sermon delivered 2,000 years ago? It's a valid question, so let me explain why the Sermon on the Mount is not just an old speech, but a revolution that is still alive today. Imagine for a moment a world where forgiveness replaces revenge, where compassion triumphs over selfishness, where love conquers hate. It seems like an impossible dream, right? Well, that's exactly the kind of world Jesus was proposing in the Sermon on the Mount. And not only did he propose it, but he also gave us the tools to make it a reality. In a world torn apart by conflicts, divisions, and hatred, the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount offer a radical alternative, a way of living that can heal broken relationships, bring peace to seemingly hopeless situations, and transform entire communities. We are not talking about abstract theories, but practical principles that have changed millions of lives throughout history. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. With these words, Jesus was not just teaching, he was challenging the entire value system of his time and ours. He was proposing a completely new way of relating to one another and to God. Let's dive into the heart of the Sermon on the Mount. It all begins in Matthew 5:1-2. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. Imagine the scene, a diverse crowd eager to listen, and Jesus sitting like a teacher about to share truths that would shake the world. The sermon begins with the Beatitudes, a series of statements that start with blessed or happy. But don't be fooled. These are not just motivational phrases. They are a radical redefinition of what it means to be truly blessed or happy. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5 verse 3. Wait, the poor in spirit? This goes against everything the world tells us about success and happiness. It's not about being materially poor, but recognizing our spiritual need. It's admitting that we don't have all the answers and that we need God. This is the first step to experiencing the kingdom of heaven, not in a distant future, but here and now. Jesus continues, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted." Matthew 5 verse 4. In a world that tells us we must always be happy, that we must quickly get over our losses, Jesus validates our pain. He tells us it's okay to mourn, that grieving is part of life, and he promises comfort. It's not an invitation to pessimism, but a recognition that pain is part of the human experience and that God is with us in our suffering. As we continue through the Beatitudes, we find this gem. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Matthew 5 verse 5. Wait a minute, the meek will inherit the earth? In a world that celebrates the aggressive and the assertive, this sounds like madness. But Jesus is directly challenging the survival of the fittest mentality. Meekness is not weakness, it's strength under control. It's the ability to respond with love even when treated unjustly. It's having the power to strike back, but choosing not to. It's like a powerful horse that has been tamed, all that strength and power under control. And then comes this. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Matthew 5 verse 6. Jesus is not talking about a casual desire for things to be better. He is talking about a deep yearning like physical hunger and thirst. It's a call to action. It's not enough to wish for change. We must actively work for a more just world. But Jesus doesn't stop there. He says, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy." Matthew 5, verse 7. In a world that often cries out for revenge, that delights in seeing the mighty fall, Jesus invites us to choose compassion. Mercy is not just a feeling, it's an action. It's choosing to forgive when we have every right to hold a grudge. And here comes one of my favorites. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Matthew 5, verse 8. This goes beyond external appearances. Jesus is talking about integrity, being the same person in public and in private. It's a call to authenticity in a world of masks and pretenses. Moving forward in the Sermon on the Mount, we come to one of Jesus' most challenging teachings. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. Matthew 5, verse 38-39. Wow, wait a minute. Is Jesus saying we should be weak and let people walk all over us? No, not at all. What Jesus is proposing here is nothing less than a revolution in human relationships. In that culture and ours, revenge was and is the norm. If someone wrongs you, it's expected that you will hit back, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. But Jesus says, stop, there's a better way. Offering the other cheek doesn't mean being a doormat. It means refusing to retaliate. It means breaking the cycle of violence and revenge. It's a way of saying, your act of violence ends with me. I will not perpetuate it. But Jesus goes even further. He says, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who mistreat you and persecute you. Matthew 5:44. This is perhaps the most radical command of all. It goes against every natural instinct we have. Love our enemies, bless those who curse us. Is Jesus serious? Yes, he is. And he explains why we should do this. So that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Matthew 5:45. Now let's delve into another fascinating section of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus addresses something we all do, judge others. He says, do not judge or you too will be judged. Matthew 7:1. At first glance, this may seem like an invitation to have no moral standards, but that's not what Jesus is saying at all. He is warning against hypocritical and arrogant judgment. Jesus illustrates this with a vivid image. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Matthew 7:3. Imagine for a moment someone with a huge log sticking out of their eye, leaning in to pick a tiny speck out of someone else's eye. It's absurd, right? And that's exactly the point. Jesus is using humor to make a powerful point. It's not about never seeing others' faults. It's about starting by examining our own hearts first. It's about approaching others with humility and compassion, not with a superior moral attitude. Jesus continues with one of his most well-known teachings. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. Matthew 7:12. This is the famous golden rule, and it is revolutionary in its simplicity. It doesn't say, don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you, which is easier because it only requires us to refrain from harmful actions. Instead, it challenges us to take the initiative to do good. It's an invitation to active empathy, to put ourselves in the other person's shoes and ask, how would I like to be treated in this situation? And then act accordingly. Now let's move on to a section of the Sermon on the Mount that addresses a topic we all face, anxiety. Jesus says, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Matthew 6:25. Before you think Jesus is promoting irresponsibility, let me explain. Jesus is not saying we shouldn't plan or work. He is addressing the paralyzing anxiety that can consume our lives. He uses beautiful examples from nature to illustrate his point. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Matthew 6:26. Think about it for a moment. Have you ever seen a bird having a panic attack about where it will find its next meal? Of course not. They simply trust that there will be food and go in search of it. Jesus continues, And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. Matthew 6:28-29. Again, Jesus is not promoting passivity. He is inviting us to trust in a loving Father who cares for us even more than for the birds and flowers. He is challenging our tendency to think that everything depends on us. And then comes the masterstroke. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Matthew 6:33. This is a radical change of priorities. Jesus is saying, put God first, seek his will, pursue his righteousness, and trust that he will take care of your needs. It's not a promise of wealth or a trouble-free life. It's an invitation to live with an eternal perspective, trusting in a God who loves and cares for us. Now let's dive into one of the most challenging parts of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus addresses something we all face daily, our priorities and our relationship with material things. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal." Matthew 6:19-20. Wow, that's strong, right? Jesus is touching on something very deep here. He's not saying it's bad to have things. He's challenging us to think about what we truly value, about where we are investing our lives. Think about it for a moment. How often do we find ourselves chasing the next shiny thing, the new phone, the latest car, the trendy clothes? And there's nothing inherently wrong with these things, but Jesus is inviting us to look beyond them. He continues with a phrase that is like a punch to the gut. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 6:21. Boom. Jesus is saying that what we value shapes who we are. Our priorities are not just about what we do, but about who we become. And then he throws down the final challenge in this section. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Matthew 6:24. Jesus is not saying that money is bad. He is pointing out that the love of money, the obsession with material things, can easily become a master in our lives. It can control us, shape our decisions, determine our course in life. And when that happens, there is no room for God. Now let's move on to one of the most famous parts of the Sermon on the Mount, the Lord's Prayer. Jesus says, "This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name." Matthew 6:9. Stop for a moment and think about how revolutionary it is to begin a prayer with our Father. In that culture, God was seen as distant and fearsome. And here is Jesus teaching us to address God as a loving Father. That changes everything. Jesus continues, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Matthew 6:10. This is not just a nice part of the prayer, it's a radical commitment. We are saying, "God, let your will be done, not mine. Let your kingdom, your way of doing things, prevail in my life and in the world." Then Jesus teaches us to ask, "Give us today our daily bread." Matthew 6:11. Did you notice something interesting? It's our bread, not my bread. Even in our basic needs, Jesus reminds us that we are part of a community, and it's daily bread. Jesus encourages us to trust in God daily, not to anxiously hoard. "Forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors." Matthew 6:12. Wow, this is tough, right? Jesus is directly linking the forgiveness we receive to the forgiveness we offer. He is saying that we cannot expect to experience God's forgiveness if we refuse to forgive others. And finally, "And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one." Matthew 6:13. Jesus acknowledges that life is a struggle, that we face temptations and difficulties. But he teaches us to depend on God, to seek his protection and deliverance. This prayer, so simple yet so profound, encompasses all aspects of life. It's a model not just of how to pray, but of how to live. Now let's move on to a part of the Sermon on the Mount that addresses something we all face: worry and anxiety. Jesus says, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes?" Matthew 6:25. That's quite a challenge, isn't it? We live in a world full of things to worry about, bills to pay, deadlines to meet, relationships to manage. And here is Jesus telling us not to worry. How is that possible? But note that Jesus is not promoting irresponsibility. He's not saying we shouldn't plan or work. He is addressing the paralyzing anxiety that can consume our lives. Jesus uses beautiful examples from nature to illustrate his point. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Matthew 6:26. Think about it for a moment. Have you ever seen a bird having a panic attack about where it will find its next meal? Of course not. They simply trust that there will be food and go in search of it. Jesus continues, "And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these." Matthew 6:28-29. Again, Jesus is not promoting passivity. He is inviting us to trust in a loving Father who cares for us even more than for the birds and flowers. He is challenging our tendency to think that everything depends on us. And then comes the powerful conclusion. "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." Matthew 6:33. This is a radical change of priorities. Jesus is saying, put God first. Seek his will, pursue his righteousness, and trust that he will take care of your needs. It's not a promise of wealth or a trouble-free life. It's an invitation to live with an eternal perspective, trusting in a God who loves and cares for us. We are nearing the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus concludes with a powerful analogy. He says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock." Matthew 7:24-25. That image is incredible, isn't it? Jesus is comparing his teachings to a solid foundation. He is saying that living according to his words gives us stability and strength to face the storms of life. But notice that Jesus does not say, "Everyone who hears these words of mine and agrees with them," or "everyone who memorizes these words of mine." He says, "Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice." The emphasis is on action, on the practical application of these teachings in our lives. Jesus continues with the contrast. "But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." Matthew 7:26-27. The message is clear. It's not enough to just hear or know Jesus' teachings. We need to live them, apply them in our daily lives, in our decisions, in our relationships. And note that in both cases, the storm comes. Jesus does not promise a life without difficulties for those who follow his teachings. The difference is in the ability to remain firm in the midst of the storms. This conclusion to the Sermon on the Mount is a call to action. It's Jesus saying, don't just be hearers, be doers. Live these truths, let them shape who you are and how you live. And so we end our journey through the Sermon on the Mount. We began with the Beatitudes, which overturned our notions of happiness and success. We explored teachings on forgiveness, love for enemies, prayer, judgment, anxiety, and more. But the question remains, what will we do with all this? How will we allow these words to transform our lives? How will we build our lives on this solid rock? The challenge is given. The choice is ours. Let us not only listen, but also practice. Not only know, but also live. For that is where the truly transformative power of the Sermon on the Mount lies. Now let's take a step back and look at the big picture. The Sermon on the Mount is not just a set of rules or moral principles. It's an invitation to a completely new way of life. Jesus is calling us to a revolution of the heart. Think about the contrast between what Jesus teaches and the values of the world around us. The world says, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Jesus says, turn the other cheek. The world says, love your friends and hate your enemies. Jesus says, love your enemies. The world says, accumulate wealth. Jesus says, store up treasures in heaven. It's as if Jesus is telling us there is a different way to live, a way that may seem foolish to the world, but is actually the path to true life, true freedom, true peace. But make no mistake, living this way is not easy. It's a daily challenge. It's swimming against the current. It's choosing love when it would be easier to choose hate. It's choosing forgiveness when it would be easier to seek revenge. It's choosing generosity when it would be easier to be selfish. Yet Jesus promises that this path, as difficult as it may be, leads to abundant life. He says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." Matthew 7:13-14. This is the heart of the Sermon on the Mount, a call to a different life, a transformed life, a life that reflects the character of God. It's an invitation to be salt and light in a world that often seems tasteless and dark. Now let's delve into how we can apply these teachings in our daily lives. Take, for example, Jesus' teaching on loving our enemies. He says, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Matthew 5:44. It sounds impossible, right? Love our enemies, pray for those who persecute us. But what if we start small? What if the next time someone irritates us in traffic, instead of cursing or making rude gestures, we say a brief prayer for that person? "Lord, bless that driver. Maybe they're having a tough day." Or think about the workplace. Maybe there's a colleague who always seems to be trying to sabotage you. What if, instead of retaliating, you decide to do something kind for that person? Maybe offer help on a project or simply greet them with a sincere smile. Jesus is not asking us to approve of wrong behavior. He is calling us to respond to evil with good, to break the cycle of hatred and retaliation. And what about Jesus's teaching on not judging others? This doesn't mean we can't discern right from wrong. It means we must approach others with humility and compassion, recognizing that we all have faults. The next time you find yourself harshly judging someone, stop and ask yourself, what circumstances might have led this person to act this way? If I were in their situation, how would I act? This simple shift in perspective can transform how we see and treat others. Now let's talk about something we all face: worry and anxiety. Jesus says, "Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." Matthew 6:34. This doesn't mean we shouldn't plan for the future. It means we shouldn't let anxiety about the future steal our peace in the present. It's an invitation to live one day at a time, trusting that God will take care of us. How can we put this into practice? How about starting each day with a moment of gratitude? Before even getting out of bed, thank God for three things in your life. This helps set a positive tone for the day and reminds us of the blessings we already have. When anxiety strikes, and it will, try this exercise. Pause for a moment, take a deep breath, and ask yourself, is this worry about something I can control? If so, make a plan of action. If not, give it to God in prayer. Remember Jesus' words. "Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they?" Matthew 6:26. Let this truth sink into your heart. You are valuable. You are loved. You are cared for. And what about prayer? Jesus taught us the Lord's Prayer as a model. How about incorporating this prayer into your daily routine? Not just reciting the words, but reflecting on each phrase. "Our Father, remember that you have a heavenly Father who loves you. Your kingdom come. Commit to living out God's values today. Give us today our daily bread. Trust God to meet your needs." Now let's talk about temptation. Jesus addresses this in the Sermon on the Mount in a very direct and frankly uncomfortable way. He says, "If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell." Matthew 5:29. Wait a minute. Is Jesus really telling us to gouge out our eyes? No, he's using hyperbole, deliberate exaggeration, to make an important point. The point is this: we must take sin seriously and be willing to take drastic measures to avoid it. So how can we apply this in our daily lives? Think about the things that frequently lead you into temptation. Maybe it's certain websites or particular TV shows, or maybe it's certain people or places. Jesus is saying, be radical in dealing with these sources of temptation. If certain websites are a problem for you, install a blocker. If certain people always negatively influence you, maybe it's time to reevaluate those friendships. This isn't easy. It may involve sacrifice. It may mean giving up things you like, but Jesus is saying it's worth it. He's saying that our spiritual purity, our moral integrity, is more important than any temporary pleasure sin might offer. And remember, we are not in this struggle alone. Jesus taught us to pray and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Matthew 6:13. We can and should ask for God's help to resist temptation. Now let's talk about something we all do every day, talk. Jesus has a lot to say about our words in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, "But I tell you that everyone will have to give account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken." Matthew 12:36. This puts our daily conversations in a whole new perspective, doesn't it? Jesus is emphasizing the power of words. They are not just sounds coming out of our mouths. They have the power to build up or tear down, to heal or hurt. So how can we apply this in our daily lives? How about trying a gossip fast for a week? Challenge yourself not to speak ill of anyone, even jokingly or harmlessly. Instead, look for ways to use your words to encourage and uplift others. Jesus also speaks about oaths. He says, "But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one." Matthew 5:34-37. The point here is not so much about formal oaths, but about integrity in our words. Jesus is saying, be a person of your word. Let your promises and commitments be so trustworthy that they don't need to be reinforced with oaths. In practice, this means doing what you say you will do. It means being honest, even when it's hard. It means admitting when you are wrong, instead of trying to cover it up with more words. Remember, our words are a reflection of our hearts. Jesus says, "For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." Matthew 12:34. So cultivating a heart full of love, compassion, and truth is key to communication that honors God and blesses others. Now let's talk about something we all do, but often don't think much about: judging others. Jesus has strong words about this in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." Matthew 7:1-2. At first glance, this may seem like Jesus is saying we should never make moral judgments, but that's not it. He is warning against hypocritical judgment, against the tendency we have to see others' faults while ignoring our own. Jesus illustrates this with a vivid image. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Matthew 7:3. Imagine this, a person with a huge log sticking out of their eye trying to take a tiny speck out of someone else's eye. It's absurd, right? And that's exactly Jesus's point. So how can we apply this in our daily lives? Here are some practical suggestions. 1, practice self-reflection. Before pointing out others' mistakes, examine your own heart. Ask yourself, am I committing the same error or something similar? 2, cultivate empathy. When you find yourself judging someone, try to put yourself in that person's shoes. What circumstances might have led to this behavior? 3, remember your own need for grace. We all make mistakes. We all need forgiveness. Let this awareness make you more compassionate toward others. 4, when it's necessary to correct someone, do it with humility and love. Remember, the goal is not to condemn, but to restore. Practice what psychologists call compassionate curiosity. Instead of judging, ask yourself, what's going on with this person? How can I help? Jesus is not saying we should never discern right from wrong. He is calling us to approach others and ourselves with humility, compassion, and grace. Imagine for a moment that you are on a hill in Galilee more than 2,000 years ago. The sun is shining on the green grass, a gentle breeze caresses your face, and in front of you is a man who is about to change the world with his words. This man is not a powerful politician, nor a famous philosopher. He is Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of God, who is about to deliver the most revolutionary speech in history, the Sermon on the Mount. But what is so special about this sermon? Why, after two millennia, do we still talk about it? Brothers and sisters, get ready for a journey that will change your perspective forever. In the next few minutes, we are going to dive into the most impactful teachings the world has ever known, teachings that challenged empires, transformed hearts, and continue to be as relevant today as the day they were spoken. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. With these words, Jesus began to turn the world upside down. What does it really mean to be poor in spirit? The answer will surprise you and make you question everything you thought you knew about success and happiness. Now you might be thinking, all right, it sounds interesting, but why should I care about a sermon delivered 2,000 years ago? It's a valid question, so let me explain why the Sermon on the Mount is not just an old speech, but a revolution that is still alive today. Imagine for a moment a world where forgiveness replaces revenge, where compassion triumphs over selfishness, where love conquers hate. It seems like an impossible dream, right? Well, that's exactly the kind of world Jesus was proposing in the Sermon on the Mount. And not only did he propose it, but he also gave us the tools to make it a reality. In a world torn apart by conflicts, divisions, and hatred, the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount offer a radical alternative, a way of living that can heal broken relationships, bring peace to seemingly hopeless situations, and transform entire communities. We're not talking about abstract theories, but practical principles that have changed millions of lives throughout history. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. With these words, Jesus was not just teaching, he was challenging the entire value system of his time and ours. He was proposing a completely new way of relating to one another and to God. Let's dive into the heart of the Sermon on the Mount. It all begins in Matthew 5:1-2. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. Imagine the scene, a diverse crowd eager to listen, and Jesus sitting like a teacher about to share truths that would shake the world. The sermon begins with the Beatitudes, a series of statements that start with blessed or happy. But don't be fooled. These are not just motivational phrases. They are a radical redefinition of what it means to be truly blessed or happy. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5 verse 3. Wait, the poor in spirit? This goes against everything the world tells us about success and happiness. It's not about being materially poor, but recognizing our spiritual need. It's admitting that we don't have all the answers and that we need God. This is the first step to experiencing the kingdom of heaven, not in a distant future, but here and now. Jesus continues, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted." Matthew 5 verse 4. In a world that tells us we must always be happy, that we must quickly get over our losses, Jesus validates our pain. He tells us it's okay to mourn, that grieving is part of life, and he promises comfort. It's not an invitation to pessimism, but a recognition that pain is part of the human experience and that God is with us in our suffering. As we continue through the Beatitudes, we find this gem. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Matthew 5 verse 5. Wait a minute, the meek will inherit the earth? In a world that celebrates the aggressive and the assertive, this sounds like madness. But Jesus is directly challenging the survival of the fittest mentality. Meekness is not weakness, it's strength under control. It's the ability to respond with love even when treated unjustly. It's having the power to strike back, but choosing not to. It's like a powerful horse that has been tamed, all that strength and power under control. And then comes this, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Matthew 5 verse 6. Jesus is not talking about a casual desire for things to be better. He is talking about a deep yearning like physical hunger and thirst. It's a call to action. It's not enough to wish for change. We must actively work for a more just world. But Jesus doesn't stop there. He says, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Matthew 5 verse 7. In a world that often cries out for revenge, that delights in seeing the mighty fall, Jesus invites us to choose compassion. Mercy is not just a feeling, it's an action. It's choosing to forgive when we have every right to hold a grudge. And here comes one of my favorites. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Matthew 5, verse 8. This goes beyond external appearances. Jesus is talking about integrity, being the same person in public and in private. It's a call to authenticity in a world of masks and pretenses. Moving forward in the Sermon on the Mount, we come to one of Jesus' most challenging teachings. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. Matthew 5, verse 38-39. Wow, wait a minute. Is Jesus saying we should be weak and let people walk all over us? No, not at all. What Jesus is proposing here is nothing less than a revolution in human relationships. In that culture and ours, revenge was and is the norm. If someone wrongs you, it's expected that you will hit back, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. But Jesus says, stop, there is a better way. Offering the other cheek doesn't mean being a doormat. It means refusing to retaliate. It means breaking the cycle of violence and revenge. It's a way of saying, your act of violence ends with me. I will not perpetuate it. But Jesus goes even further. He says, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who mistreat you and persecute you. Matthew 5, 44. This is perhaps the most radical command of all. It goes against every natural instinct we have. Love our enemies, bless those who curse us. Is Jesus serious? Yes, he is. And he explains why we should do this, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Matthew 5, 45. Now let's delve into another fascinating section of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus addresses something we all do, judge others. He says, do not judge or you too will be judged. Matthew 7, 1. At first glance, this may seem like an invitation to have no moral standards, but that's not what Jesus is saying at all. He is warning against hypocritical and arrogant judgment. Jesus illustrates this with a vivid image. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Matthew 7, 3. Imagine for a moment someone with a huge log sticking out of their eye, leaning in to pick a tiny speck out of someone else's eye. It's absurd, right? And that's exactly the point. Jesus is using humor to make a powerful point. It's not about never seeing others' faults. It's about starting by examining our own hearts first. It's about approaching others with humility and compassion, not with a superior moral attitude. Jesus continues with one of his most well-known teachings. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. Matthew 7, 12. This is the famous golden rule, and it is revolutionary in its simplicity. It doesn't say, don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you, which is easier because it only requires us to refrain from harmful actions. Instead, it challenges us to take the initiative to do good. It's an invitation to active empathy, to put ourselves in the other person's shoes and ask, how would I like to be treated in this situation? And then act accordingly. Now let's move on to a section of the Sermon on the Mount that addresses a topic we all face, anxiety. Jesus says, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Matthew 6, 25. Before you think Jesus is promoting irresponsibility, let me explain. Jesus is not saying we shouldn't plan or work. He is addressing the paralyzing anxiety that can consume our lives. He uses beautiful examples from nature to illustrate his point. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Matthew 6, 26. Think about it for a moment. Have you ever seen a bird having a panic attack about where it will find its next meal? Of course not. They simply trust that there will be food and go in search of it. Jesus continues, and why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. Matthew 6, 28-29. Again, Jesus is not promoting passivity. He is inviting us to trust in a loving Father who cares for us even more than for the birds and flowers. He is challenging our tendency to think that everything depends on us. And then comes the masterstroke. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Matthew 6:33. This is a radical change of priorities. Jesus is saying, put God first, seek his will, pursue his righteousness, and trust that he will take care of your needs. It's not a promise of wealth or a trouble-free life. It's an invitation to live with an eternal perspective, trusting in a God who loves and cares for us. Now let's dive into one of the most challenging parts of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus addresses something we all face daily, our priorities and our relationship with material things. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal." Matthew 6:19-20. Wow, that's strong, right? Jesus is touching on something very deep here. He's not saying it's bad to have things. He's challenging us to think about what we truly value, about where we are investing our lives. Think about it for a moment. How often do we find ourselves chasing the next shiny thing, the new phone, the latest car, the trendy clothes? And there's nothing inherently wrong with these things, but Jesus is inviting us to look beyond them. He continues with a phrase that is like a punch to the gut. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 6:21. Boom. Jesus is saying that what we value shapes who we are. Our priorities are not just about what we do, but about who we become. And then he throws down the final challenge in this section. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Matthew 6:24. Jesus is not saying that money is bad. He is pointing out that the love of money, the obsession with material things, can easily become a master in our lives. It can control us, shape our decisions, determine our course in life. And when that happens, there is no room for God. Now let's move on to one of the most famous parts of the Sermon on the Mount, the Lord's Prayer. Jesus says, "This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name." Matthew 6:9. Stop for a moment and think about how revolutionary it is to begin a prayer with our Father. In that culture, God was seen as distant and fearsome. And here is Jesus teaching us to address God as a loving Father. That changes everything. Jesus continues, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Matthew 6:10. This is not just a nice part of the prayer, it's a radical commitment. We are saying, "God, let your will be done, not mine. Let your kingdom, your way of doing things, prevail in my life and in the world." Then Jesus teaches us to ask, "Give us today our daily bread." Matthew 6:11. Did you notice something interesting? It's our bread, not my bread. Even in our basic needs, Jesus reminds us that we are part of a community, and it's daily bread. Jesus encourages us to trust in God daily, not to anxiously hoard. "Forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors." Matthew 6:12. Wow, this is tough, right? Jesus is directly linking the forgiveness we receive to the forgiveness we offer. He is saying that we cannot expect to experience God's forgiveness if we refuse to forgive others. And finally, "And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one." Matthew 6:13. Jesus acknowledges that life is a struggle, that we face temptations and difficulties. But he teaches us to depend on God, to seek his protection and deliverance. This prayer, so simple yet so profound, encompasses all aspects of life. It's a model not just of how to pray, but of how to live. Now let's move on to a part of the Sermon on the Mount that addresses something we all face, worry and anxiety. Jesus says, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes?" Matthew 6:25. That's quite a challenge, isn't it? We live in a world full of things to worry about, bills to pay, deadlines to meet, relationships to manage, and here is Jesus telling us not to worry. How is that possible? But note that Jesus is not promoting irresponsibility. He's not saying we shouldn't plan or work. He is addressing the paralyzing anxiety that can consume our lives. Jesus uses beautiful examples from nature to illustrate his point. Look at the birds of the air. they do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Matthew 6:26. Think about it for a moment. Have you ever seen a bird having a panic attack about where it will find its next meal? Of course not. They simply trust that there will be food and go in search of it. Jesus continues, "And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these." Matthew 6:28-29. Again, Jesus is not promoting passivity. He is inviting us to trust in a loving Father who cares for us even more than for the birds and flowers. He is challenging our tendency to think that everything depends on us. And then comes the powerful conclusion. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Matthew 6:33. This is a radical change of priorities. Jesus is saying, put God first, seek his will, pursue his righteousness, and trust that he will take care of your needs. It's not a promise of wealth or a trouble-free life. It's an invitation to live with an eternal perspective, trusting in a God who loves and cares for us. We are nearing the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus concludes with a powerful analogy. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. Matthew 7:24-25. That image is incredible, isn't it? Jesus is comparing his teachings to a solid foundation. He is saying that living according to his words gives us stability and strength to face the storms of life. But notice that Jesus does not say, everyone who hears these words of mine and agrees with them, or everyone who memorizes these words of mine. He says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice. The emphasis is on action, on the practical application of these teachings in our lives. Jesus continues with the contrast. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Matthew 7:26-27. The message is clear. It's not enough to just hear or know Jesus' teachings. We need to live them, apply them in our daily lives, in our decisions, in our relationships. And note that in both cases, the storm comes. Jesus does not promise a life without difficulties for those who follow his teachings. The difference is in the ability to remain firm in the midst of the storms. This conclusion to the Sermon on the Mount is a call to action. It's Jesus saying, don't just be hearers, be doers. Live these truths, let them shape who you are and how you live. And so we end our journey through the Sermon on the Mount. We began with the Beatitudes, which overturned our notions of happiness and success. We explored teachings on forgiveness, love for enemies, prayer, judgment, anxiety, and more. But the question remains, what will we do with all this? How will we allow these words to transform our lives? How will we build our lives on this solid rock? The challenge is given, the choice is ours. Let us not only listen, but also practice. Not only know, but also live. For that is where the truly transformative power of the Sermon on the Mount lies. Now let's take a step back and look at the big picture. The Sermon on the Mount is not just a set of rules or moral principles. It's an invitation to a completely new way of life. Jesus is calling us to a revolution of the heart. Think about the contrast between what Jesus teaches and the values of the world around us. The world says, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Jesus says, turn the other cheek. The world says, love your friends and hate your enemies. Jesus says, love your enemies. The world says, accumulate wealth. Jesus says, store up treasures in heaven. It's as if Jesus is telling us there is a different way to live, a way that may seem foolish to the world, but is actually the path to true life, true freedom, true peace. But make no mistake, living this way is not easy. It's a daily challenge. It's swimming against the current. It's choosing love when it would be easier to choose hate. It's choosing forgiveness when it would be easier to seek revenge. It's choosing generosity when it would be easier to be selfish. Yet Jesus promises that this path, as difficult as it may be, leads to abundant life. He says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." Matthew 7:13-14. This is the heart of the Sermon on the Mount, a call to a different life, a transformed life, a life that reflects the character of God. It's an invitation to be salt and light in a world that often seems tasteless and dark. Now let's delve into how we can apply these teachings in our daily lives. Take, for example, Jesus' teaching on loving our enemies. He says, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Matthew 5:44. It sounds impossible, right? Love our enemies, pray for those who persecute us. But what if we start small? What if the next time someone irritates us in traffic, instead of cursing or making rude gestures, we say a brief prayer for that person? "Lord, bless that driver. Maybe they're having a tough day." Or think about the workplace. Maybe there's a colleague who always seems to be trying to sabotage you. What if, instead of retaliating, you decide to do something kind for that person? Maybe offer help on a project or simply greet them with a sincere smile. Jesus is not asking us to approve of wrong behavior. He is calling us to respond to evil with good, to break the cycle of hatred and retaliation. And what about Jesus's teaching on not judging others? This doesn't mean we can't discern right from wrong. It means we must approach others with humility and compassion, recognizing that we all have faults. The next time you find yourself harshly judging someone, stop and ask yourself, what circumstances might have led this person to act this way? If I were in their situation, how would I act? This simple shift in perspective can transform how we see and treat others. Now let's talk about something we all face: worry and anxiety. Jesus says, "Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." Matthew 6:34. This doesn't mean we shouldn't plan for the future. It means we shouldn't let anxiety about the future steal our peace in the present. It's an invitation to live one day at a time, trusting that God will take care of us. How can we put this into practice? How about starting each day with a moment of gratitude? Before even getting out of bed, thank God for three things in your life. This helps set a positive tone for the day and reminds us of the blessings we already have. When anxiety strikes, and it will, try this exercise. Pause for a moment, take a deep breath, and ask yourself, "Is this worry about something I can control? If so, make a plan of action. If not, give it to God in prayer." Remember Jesus' words. "Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they?" Matthew 6:26. Let this truth sink into your heart. You are valuable. You are loved. You are cared for. And what about prayer? Jesus taught us the Lord's Prayer as a model. How about incorporating this prayer into your daily routine? Not just reciting the words, but reflecting on each phrase. "Our Father, remember that you have a heavenly Father who loves you. Your kingdom come. Commit to living out God's values today. Give us today our daily bread. Trust God to meet your needs." Now let's talk about temptation. Jesus addresses this in the Sermon on the Mount in a very direct and frankly uncomfortable way. He says, "If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell." Matthew 5:29. Wait a minute. Is Jesus really telling us to gouge out our eyes? No, he's using hyperbole, deliberate exaggeration, to make an important point. The point is this: we must take sin seriously and be willing to take drastic measures to avoid it. So how can we apply this in our daily lives? Think about the things that frequently lead you into temptation. Maybe it's certain websites or particular TV shows, or maybe it's certain people or places. Jesus is saying, be radical in dealing with these sources of temptation. If certain websites are a problem for you, install a blocker. If certain people always negatively influence you, maybe it's time to reevaluate those friendships. This isn't easy. It may involve sacrifice. It may mean giving up things you like, but Jesus is saying it's worth it. He's saying that our spiritual purity, our moral integrity, is more important than any temporary pleasure sin might offer. And remember, we are not in this struggle alone. Jesus taught us to pray and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Matthew 6, verse 13. We can and should ask for God's help to resist temptation. Now let's talk about something we all do every day, talk. Jesus has a lot to say about our words in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, "But I tell you that everyone will have to give account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken." Matthew 12, verse 36. This puts our daily conversations in a whole new perspective, doesn't it? Jesus is emphasizing the power of words. They are not just sounds coming out of our mouths. They have the power to build up or tear down, to heal or hurt. So how can we apply this in our daily lives? How about trying a gossip fast for a week? Challenge yourself not to speak ill of anyone, even jokingly or harmlessly. Instead, look for ways to use your words to encourage and uplift others. Jesus also speaks about oaths. He says, "But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one." Matthew 5, 34-37. The point here is not so much about formal oaths, but about integrity in our words. Jesus is saying, be a person of your word. Let your promises and commitments be so trustworthy that they don't need to be reinforced with oaths. In practice, this means doing what you say you will do. It means being honest, even when it's hard. It means admitting when you are wrong, instead of trying to cover it up with more words. Remember, our words are a reflection of our hearts. Jesus says, "For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." Matthew 12, 34. So cultivating a heart full of love, compassion, and truth is key to communication that honors God and blesses others. Now let's talk about something we all do, but often don't think much about: judging others. Jesus has strong words about this in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." Matthew 7, 1-2. At first glance, this may seem like Jesus is saying we should never make moral judgments, but that's not it. He is warning against hypocritical judgment, against the tendency we have to see others' faults while ignoring our own. Jesus illustrates this with a vivid image. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Matthew 7, verse 3. Imagine this, a person with a huge log sticking out of their eye trying to take a tiny speck out of someone else's eye. It's absurd, right? And that's exactly Jesus' point. So how can we apply this in our daily lives? Here are some practical suggestions. 1. Practice self-reflection. Before pointing out others' mistakes, examine your own heart. Ask yourself, am I committing the same error or something similar? 2. Cultivate empathy. When you find yourself judging someone, try to put yourself in that person's shoes. What circumstances might have led to this behavior? 3. Remember your own need for grace. We all make mistakes. We all need forgiveness. Let this awareness make you more compassionate toward others. 4. When it's necessary to correct someone, do it with humility and love. Remember, the goal is not to condemn, but to restore. Practice what psychologists call compassionate curiosity. Instead of judging, ask yourself, what's going on with this person? How can I help? Jesus is not saying we should never discern right from wrong. He is calling us to approach others and ourselves with humility, compassion, and grace.